Are you blessed or are you cursed with a strong imagination and a spiritual thirst? Do you wanna confide about the darkness inside? Come and talk about it on Self
Worst. Buenos dias. Welcome to Self Worst Podcast. I'm Brad Pearson. Hello. How's it going? We did it. We made it to daylight savings time. Or daylight saving time. I don't know which side of it. Is it on? Is it off? Is it? Who cares? The days are longer now. We did it. And you know what? It's worth the hour of sleep. That's my take. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think y'all are crying too much about losing an hour of sleep when it means that the sun's going to go down later in the day when we're all awake. It makes more sense. Honestly, they should keep it this way. Fuck going back the other way. Fuck fall back, spring forward, just leave it. Leave it on. Don't turn it back off or on or whichever it is. Who cares? People get so whiny about the hour of sleep. And you want to know what living with depression is like when you the day after daylight savings time, the spring forward version, when you feel all discombobulated and you want to just pass out, just lie flat on your bed, just let your legs give out from under you and fall forward onto your bed, like how Frodo falls down onto the swampland in the Two Towers, just face first right onto the bed and fall asleep at like 2 p.m. That's how you feel all the time when you're in the depression. So, suck it up, you crybabies. Now the sun's going down. Oh, it's nice. It was a beautiful day today. And we kind of earned it. You know, you've heard my thoughts about the sort of weak winters we've been having. Feels unearned, the springtime when it comes around. Because winter wasn't that harsh. Maybe I'm just kind of masochistic about it. I don't know. Is this like a real like Protestant work ethic suffering kind of thing? But I want a winter to make me appreciate the spring more. But seeing as how the planet is brewing up a nice big fever to kill us off, we don't have winters like we used to, and that's fine. We can still enjoy a nice spring day. I'll tell you, as I'm recording this, you might hear it. My door is open. Got the screen door open, just letting the air in. That's nice. Love that. Backyard is calling. I'm ready to do some spring cleaning. Ready to get out there. Just sit in the hammock. Just fucking vibe. Speaking of vibes, RIP, big rips to Eric Carmen.
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Not Eric Cartman. Eric Carmen. The frontman of the seminal power pop band, The Raspberries. Look at that. The melodies, the harmonies on that shit. Yeah, sure. Some of the lyrics for The Raspberry songs are a little creepy. What are you going to do? It was the 70s. Everybody has songs about young girls and shit. It was weird and, yeah, what are you going to do? But goddamn, those hooks. Those chord changes. Come on. Amazing. It's springtime. Springtime's a good power pop time. Always makes me want to put on the Blue Album. The vibe. Always makes me want to, I don't know, put on some Raspberries, some Big Star, some Bad Finger, some Matthew Sweet. Get into that. If you haven't delved into power pop, come on. Listen to some Cheap Trick. Listen to some Cars. Listen to some Teenage Fan Club. Do it. It's good for you. Make you feel good. It's catchy. It's nice. Makes you feel like driving around with the windows down. It's that time of year. It's happening. I don't know. As long as I'm making media recommendations, though. Let me give you one more. Netflix. It's got some good documentaries out. I'm not much of a, you know, sit and watch Netflix documentaries kind of guy. Because there's so much of them on there, and they are really varying quality. However, when they're on, they're on. Oh. Y'all seen The Program? Troubled Teens? Insane fucking fucked up military cult thing happening? Crazy. Y'all seen The Octopus Murders? Oof. Fun. Paranoid. Insane. Just crazy. It's crazy that I don't know how much of it's real, but like a lot of it is. And you kind of aren't sure what, and that's kind of what fucks with you. Anyway, watch those. Those are great. Particularly The Program pertains a lot to mental health. You know, we've been having some social workers and stuff like that on. Listen to a recent episode, Maria Guido. Because she went through a lot of that. I don't know if she went to that actual... I don't think she went to that actual program or anything. But was definitely in a lot of troubled teen industry bullshit that did not help. Listen to her experience. This happens to real people. It's fucked up. Anyway. Enough about me. Let's get to the show. We're going to talk this week to the eminent Liam Anderson. You might know him from Well, There's Your Problem. It's an engineering disasters podcast, and it's a YouTube show. I don't know what the over-under is with people who watch it just on YouTube and watch the whole slideshow versus people who just listen to the podcast. I'm a podcast guy. I just listen to the audio, and I feel like when they're describing slides, sometimes I miss out, but that's okay. I just try and really concentrate and imagine the picture in my head. Sometimes a little picture pops into my head. I can do it if I really will it. I really think hard. Anyway, he was very lovely to talk to. And he just really hit the ground running. He just got right into it. You know, sometimes with guests, it takes a bit. You do a little back and forth. You do a little bit of banter. You do a little bit of just warm them up a bit. Do some light rounds. And then you go in and then you're like, okay, now I think we've established enough of a vibe where we can start really getting in there with the trauma and the darkness and all of that. This dude, my man just Leroy Jenkins'd it. Just went right in. First thing he says, I was in group therapy just now. And I was like, okay, let's go. I guess we're starting. Wasted no time. Which is a great approach. I don't know. I mean, I like both. Both are good. But yeah, interview speaks for itself. We had to cut it a little bit short because I had to leave. I had to go do a therapy thing right after we talked. I had to do some intake thing. I don't know. You talk to one doctor that they're like, okay, yeah, he's crazy. And then you start talking to a shrink and then they're like, hey, we need you to talk to a nurse practitioner so we can start giving you your meds. And they talk to you. Then they talk to a third person and they're like, oh yeah, he's crazy. He needs these particular pills to keep him in check. Make sure that he's a good worker and, you know, a semi-productive member of society, blah, blah, blah. That's what we're here for. That's what we did. Anyway. But we cram a lot of stuff into this, slightly shorter than normal interview. And it's really good. So check it out. I'm going to let you get to that. Follow me at Radical Pearson Instagram. I post stories and stuff on there. I'm not really on the Twitter anymore. I'm not really on the... I've given up. Blue Sky and Threads, fuck all that shit. It's not... I don't care anymore. I'm touching grass. Patreon.com/selfworst. There's bonus content. I've been thinking about doing some more bonus content, maybe doing like a weekly little hangout thing on Zoom or something like that. I don't know. I'm in the lab. I'm making new bonus content, trying some things out. So stay tuned for that. And then there's going to be more stuff on the Patreon that you'll be missing out on if you don't sign up. And that's on you. So let's go to the show with my new friend, Liam Anderson. Yay, Liam. Excited to have you here.
I'm thrilled.
How you doing?
I'm good. I just got out of group therapy.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's go right into it. What's the group therapy? What's that about?
Yeah, man, I'm in a men's group that's really helpful for, I'm actually in for some substance use issues.
Hmm.
It should be no surprise to anyone listening that I struggle with alcoholism and drinking. And I've used many drugs in the past. I'm off those. I've been off those for many years. But a lot of what I was looking for was a group that was not necessarily your straight 12-step program.
Sure.
I'm not. We do more of a freewheeling chaos ball. But yeah, I'm in a men's alcohol and a lot of guys have some cross issues. You know, there's some guys in there for sex addiction. There's some guys in there for more, you know, hard drug use. There's some guys in there just because they wanted a support group.
Sure.
So I'm there. I really like it. I think it's given me a new new perspective on a lot of stuff. It's nice to have guys, you know, just solidarity and mutual aid throughout.
Yeah, I like that. It's just a group for, you know, guys who can't stop, guys who need to pump the brakes a little bit.
Whatever, exactly. It might be.
That's cool.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that. Because usually the substance at hand or the behavior at hand doesn't really matter so much. I mean, it's kind of,
it's the, if you want to get into specifics, addiction. Yeah.
It's more the underlying shit that's causing the addiction or the compulsive behavior, you know, that needs to be addressed. And if you're addressing that, then usually, you know, you're good and or you're on the right path. And yeah, 12 step works for some people, definitely not for everybody. It's
right.
It's
that's
very,
how my parents got sober in a 12 step program. Mm-hmm. They both did 12 step, your traditional AA. But I know people who have done it and it's not what worked for them. I you know, on the subject of addiction, I'm kind of touchy, just because it is so personal to me, and I think a lot of us working in the helping professions can sort of say, well, this is what the book says,
mm-hmm.
and sort of remove ourselves from it in a way that's not especially healthy.
Yeah. I mean, so like, how long have you been in the group?
Let's see. I've been in the group. It is March now. I've been in the group since I think about last June.
Okay. How did you discover it?
I basically had a night where I was just like, all right, man, like I had been drinking and I had, you know, had some pretty dark thoughts, self-harm, suicide. I'm probably gonna have to slap a trigger warning on this one, but you know, where I had just been like, all right, man, this can't continue at this pace.
Yeah.
And looked online. There's a great website, for Philly area ones. I don't know the URL top of my head, but I've been at the, center right now since June, and it's really useful. The guy who runs it is very feeling and very, very empathetic, very good. And I had talked to my sort of one-on-one therapist about it. I've been in therapy for 2 years now. I've been in therapy on and off my whole life, but I've been in therapy continuously for 2 years. And he was like, yeah, you should probably like join a group. Like you should probably do that in addition to this.
Mm-hmm. What do you get out of, a group versus talking to just a professional one-on-one?
Yeah, I think one of the things I get out of group therapy is like guys who have like at least a version of my problem, right? Mm-hmm. Where, guys who have at least a version of the issues that I'm facing, because all addiction is different, but all addiction is kind of the same.
Yeah.
And I think that just having that rather than a therapist who's like, oh, you're drinking too much. Like, tell me about it. It's like, I don't fucking know, man. I'm drinking too much.
Right. Yeah. It helps. Oftentimes I've found that talking, I mean, you know, I'm very pro both, you know, like definitely it's good to talk to a professional who is sort of a neutral party, who is trained and understands like how the human psyche works on some level. But it's also good to talk to your peers. It's also good
talk
to other regular Joes who are just having those experiences and don't necessarily have a like clinical therapy background. And like the community aspect is enormous. And that is, you know, especially for people who I think have issues with drinking, with alcohol, like, cause it's such a social drug, then having a community is sort of built into your drinking, right? Like,
right. And you're trying to, exactly.
Yeah. The reason it's hard for a lot of people to stop drinking is all their best friends drink. And
yes,
it's like the most important people and the most important memories of their lives are around that. And then they have to like start from nothing, you know, and like take this like complete other path. And maybe it really depends. Like sometimes you have to just not deal with your old drinking buddies anymore, not fuck with them anymore. Or sometimes you just have to take some time off, or sometimes you can totally like chill with them and you're just like, nah, but I'll have a Coke.
Right. You know? Yeah, exactly. I mean, my best friend, Justin Gibbs Rosniak, shout out Roz, if you're listening, I'll see you Friday. Mm-hmm. We've talked about what our friendship looks like, with and without drinking. I'm grateful that I can hang out with him without drinking. We both have had spells of just pure unrestricted alcoholism in our past and our histories. And we've, you know, I think taking steps to be like, all right, man, it's the party's over. Yeah. So I've been grateful to my friends as they've gotten older for sort of, you know, some of them are fathers now, some of them are just like working 200 hours a week to sort of be like, all right, can we have fun and just play Magic and not get like shit faced?
Yeah, I mean it does kind of happen with age for a lot of people. I mean, just because you get busy and you don't have time for that shit, you have other obligations, but and also just biologically, you're
hit the wall, man. You hit the wall. You
can't fucking drink like you used to. It's hard. It takes its toll, you know. And like your body can't do it anymore. Your body's like, please stop. Please stop putting actual poison in me every night.
I'm dying. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a lot of it, right? Is it like, you know, and the shit that you did when you were 22 isn't fun in the what, you know, isn't fun anymore. Like where you're just like, oh, I'm gonna like drink till 4 a.m. and then I'm just gonna sleep it off for 5 hours, because you can do that when you're 22 and you can't do that now. And there's you know, the thought of like, I'm gonna be with these guys the rest of my natural born life, so I want to have interests that aren't just drinking.
Have you formed, like, it sounds like you're forming new social groups, but have you been able to maintain a sort of a regularity with like people you used to drink with, and like now they understand, or like has that been like chill that like your old drinking buddies are like, nah, he doesn't do that anymore, but we'll still like barbecue with them or whatever?
Well, I mean I'm not sober, like, you know, I'm actually not. This is, like I said, it's sort of a support group that maybe closer to an Al-Anon than anything else.
Okay.
That we just happen to be in the middle of.
Okay.
But yeah, I would say that like the vast majority of people who I got like really shit faced with, I've sort of moved on from, where that was the only bond we had.
Right.
And I don't wish those people any ill will. It's just like the only thing we had in common was getting shit faced. Right. So you just sort of drift away from those people.
Yeah. Yeah. That is, you no longer have that common interest.
Because there's no common thread, right? Like there's the, you know, when you're just drinking and you're an absolute moron when you're 22, like there's the like, oh, we're just going to like stay up all night and party and talk. And then there's that, not that social lubricant anymore.
Hmm. I've talked about this with guests before. I forget what the actual process was called. I had a guest on, Melanie Owen, who she was in a similar thing. It's sort of like a CBT-based approach to drinking and substance stuff where you don't quit. It's not like an absolutist, like, I am not drinking again. I have been sober for X amount of days. This is like a 12-step thing. This is like, it's a yes or no thing. It's, I need to understand better why I go so hard.
That's much more what we do. Yes. Yeah.
And it's like, it's not like I can't have a beer with dinner. It's that I need to like understand what sends me down the path when I'm like three drinks in and I'm like, hey, one more. Cool. And then all of a sudden it's
Shit has hit the fan.
So that sounds like that's more your thing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, when did that kind of start?
The alcoholism or the go ahead.
Yeah, when did the, you know, the like drinking to excess and not really,
oh man,
feeling like you kind of like the brakes weren't really responding.
So let's see here. I started drinking regularly around 1920 because I went to college. And mm-hmm. I want to background this with, my parents are sober and they're absolutists about it.
Right.
So my parents both did AA, both have not had a drink since the early 80s. Very like, there was no alcohol in our home, nothing like that. I didn't have friends in high school who really drank. I was sort of on the periphery of a couple of those groups, but I like alcohol. And I want to offer a preface this with like, my two drugs of choice are alcohol and cocaine.
Ooh, okay. Okay. Good combo.
I have not had cocaine in years. Uh-huh. We can get into that later, but sure. I started drinking around 1920, and from the beginning, there's something to know about me, which is that I am a big person. I am 290 plus pounds. I am 6'1", 6'2". I take a long time to hit limits.
Right.
So if I've explained this to my wife and I explained this to other people and we've had this conversation where it's hard to know your limits when you so rarely reach them.
Right.
And then in my mid 20s, I was reaching them and I was exceeding them. I think the very beginning of the seeds of like, oh, I should probably get this shit under control was spring 2016. I had broken up with my college girlfriend in the fall of 2015. And then Roz and I just blacked out for 3 months. Yeah, so that was like the beginning of like, oh shit, like I'm 24, 25 at this point. I'm doing shitty at work because I'm just drinking all the time. My relationship with my parents is strained because I'm just drinking all the time, and my parents are very much like, don't fucking do that. And being the smart person that I am, I was like, nah, fuck that, like I'm just gonna keep drinking. I really started to get out of control, like even. And like well into when I first started dating my now wife, I was still drinking a lot. And it wasn't until maybe 3 or 4 years ago, we've been together for 6, that she was like, hey, you like if you want this to work out, like we're going to have to do something about our drinking together. So it was really that conversation that led to like, OK, like we should like pump the brakes here. Mm-hmm. And then as we had that conversation, COVID hit. And it was like, oh, there's nothing to fucking do but drink.
Right.
And then, so we had sort of a reset. And in the last couple of years, as we've talked about the potential, potentially having a kid, we got married in December. There's been a lot of like, we're going to have to like get, like the day is coming where I'm just like 100% sober. And, right. You know, that's a fact that I know. And that's like, that's scary, right? Because it's just like, I've been relying on this thing for 13 years. I have been relying on substances of some kind or another since I was 16. Like,
Yeah.
Doing it cold turkey is fucking scary.
Yeah, it's a lot. And it's not necessarily the only path to go. And you know, I know that, like, a lot of people might fight me on this and that might cause trouble for people. Like, if the bargaining that people sometimes do, if they are somebody who is just like, I have to just, like, not do this, and if I try and bargain with myself and like, maybe I can have one, maybe I can do this, like, and just like it always backslides, right? But you know, people are very complex and things work differently for different people, and so I'm fully in support of you know, tailoring your treatment of an issue to you and what's going on.
Right, 100%. I've been very grateful for, you know, I had this really interesting conversation with my mom, who has been sober since the 80s and is very skeptical of the sort of, like, sober curious movement, because to her it's a binary, right? And to me, I've been grateful because it's sort of like what widespread awareness and knowledge of, like, celiac disease did for food allergies and, like, labeling of food allergens. Mm-hmm. I think that the sober curious movement has done for sobriety in general. To me personally, if I'm not going to drink, I don't want to replicate the experience of drinking. I just want to, like, have my Diet Coke and fuck off. But right. I think that there's a lot to be said for the, like, hey, man, maybe putting a literal poison in our bodies isn't the best thing we could possibly do. And we should look to, like, I totally get, like, you know, I totally get, like, when my parents at my rehearsal dinner, my dad had a non-alcoholic beer for the first time in his life. He had a Athletic Brewing Mexican lager, which he hated, but he did have it.
Right.
And it was just like, oh, like, my dad can feel included because my dad can't smoke weed in public. He doesn't smoke weed anymore, but, you know, his substances of choice, he can't use in public, so.
Right. Yeah, that's another kind of point of contention with people who have quit is, you know, like, non-alcoholic beers, which, honestly, like, they've gotten pretty good. Like, the Athletic beer stuff, like, those are decent. That's, like, a flavorful, nice beer, like, where, like, back in the day all anybody had was, like, O'Doul's, which kind of sucks shit. And
yeah, I think my mom has a one-sided beef with whoever brews O'Doul's. I believe that to be true. I think that's her. She tilts at windmills about it, but my mom hates O'Doul's for some reason. I don't know. You'd have to ask her.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. Like, because I kind of, like, there's vegans and stuff who don't like the quote unquote fake meat thing.
The Beyond Meat. That's kind of how she feels about. I think that's basically it. I think you've hit it.
Yeah.
Where it's like, well, why are we trying to replicate this experience in the first place? The whole point is to not have it.
Right. I guess, yeah, and again, I'm like, well, whatever works for you, man, like, if that's what, you know, I'm not a sober person myself. In fact, I have to, full disclosure, I was drinking a drink before we started recording, because I was like, I'm just going to chill and drink and wait for you to show up. And then you started the conversation with just like, well, you know, I'm in a substance abuse program. I'm like, oh, fuck.
No. It's fine. I think a lot of it is just like, there's a realization on some level that I'll never be able to truly get this fire out. And what that means for me, I don't know yet, but I know that, like, that's what we're lurching towards.
Yeah. Get this fire. I like that. Get this fire out. Like, as there is a fire, right? There is an intensity, an urgency. And I can hear that when, you know, when I listen to you on the podcast, there's a real, like, energy in you that and a passion that is a good thing that you can wield for good, but also, you know, probably causes your feelings to be really big and hard to deal with on a daily basis, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, I will say that, like, with regards to feelings, So I have hinted at it. I'll say it explicitly. I work at Lutheran Settlement House, mm-hmm. which is based in the social house movement of the early 20th century. Please support our work, by the way. We need money so desperately.
Yeah, we'll plug it in the show notes.
Absolutely. Hell yeah. I deal with unhoused people. Survivors of domestic violence, a lot of the ugly bits of society that we pretend we don't see, right? Right. And I sort of have channeled, I try to use my anger as a tool now, mm-hmm. in that I try to use anger to communicate with our audience, you know, it is okay that you're pissed off and you should stay pissed off.
Yeah.
At capitalism, at, you know, stripping the earth of its resources, stripping people of their dignity and feeding them into the proverbial wood chipper. And it is okay and good and right to be pissed off, because I think a lot of what we do in psychology and in therapy, having been my mother is a psychologist by trade, having been around it, having personally gone through therapy and being in psychiatric treatment, I think we sort of do ourselves a disservice where we sort of think, oh, I just need to turn those ugly emotions off. And those ugly emotions, like all emotions, are neutral. Mm-hmm. It's contextual. They're not good. Like, it's bad if you're angry and you like hit your spouse or partner, but it's good if you're angry at people who would deprive you and your partner of their dignity.
Right. Right. Yeah, emotions themselves aren't necessarily good or bad things. They just are. They just are
right,
what they
exactly.
are.
And that's I learned that from Mr. Yeah. Rogers.
Hey, I mean, what an OG of emotional intelligence.
Yeah, my mom taught me that from a very young age.
Yeah. So can you talk about, like, because anger is a thing. Anger is like a big running arc on this show, because I'm the guy who hosts the podcast and anger is one of my things. So like anytime anybody like brings up, you know, anger stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, now we have this. So talk a little bit more about like your journey with anger and you know, when it's been used for good and when it's been used for bad.
Sure. So I came out of the gate as an angry kid, and like I want to stress, as I always do, that I had a very happy childhood. Mm-hmm. I am an only child. I am a child of older parents. My mm-hmm. dad turned 78 this year. My mom's about to turn 71. They're the loveliest people on earth. But I had a lot of anger, and I don't really know why, and I've never really understood why. I think, you know, right. I was a fat kid.
Where's it come from? Like, same way. Like, I have lovely parents and like a real wholesome upbringing. And I'm like, why am I so pissed off all the time?
What? Well, yeah, exactly. Right.
Am I just bad?
And I would act out in anger physically towards my peers and get mm-hmm. in a lot of fights and scraps as a kid. And it derailed my first serious relationship where I just like couldn't, coupled with the drink, like I just couldn't stop. Mm-hmm. Right. And now I think because of, well, there's your problem, and because of, you know, even 10,000 losses and Twitter, where I can just like get this out in a way that doesn't feel so destructive, where the great thing about Twitter, if there is one, is that like the most public people, like the most famous people in the world, are there for you to mock.
Oh yeah.
Like Elon Musk is right there for you to shit on him. Yeah. And he's going to read that you shit on him, and that fucking rules. I guess the one good thing about him buying that hell site is that like we can all directly crap at his face.
Sure.
But in terms of a path of anger, you know, I have always been on the left. My parents are very far to the left, and I had been raised, you know, and I think for a lot of us, you know, I wouldn't say that 2016 radicalized me because I'd been there already.
Yeah.
But 2016 was palpably angry for me, where it was just like, we deserve fucking better than this. And it's been a journey from that moment of like, we deserve better than this. And I think I think saying it's just anger kind of does it a disservice, because it's anger. And I think a lot of us on the left also like, it's anger where it and when it matters, right? Where for us, you know, it's no use to like talk to like some chud in his truck in Oklahoma, like who wants to like ban trans kids from existing because he's a fucking prick. But like, if you, you know, it's important to like yell at Joe Biden because he might do something about it.
Yeah.
And if we look like assholes, then we look like assholes. But my dad taught me once that all he understood about being a lawyer, he was a lawyer 40 plus years until he retired, was all he ever learned was how to be an asshole and when to be an asshole.
Hmm.
I think that's the most important thing we can learn with our anger. It's like, it's just an emotion, but you, like all emotions, it has to be contextualized. You know, there's that saying that like, if one person like runs into you, they're the asshole. But if 10 people do it, you're the asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of it. It's like, you have to understand that there's a time and a space for your anger, and there's a time and a space to put that anger away and be like, well, how can I actually help these people?
When you, like, before you figured it out though, like, I mean, were you a bar fighter? Were you a wall puncher?
Bar fights. Yeah. I was just looking for an outlet, right? Where it was just like, and I had no space to control my anger. So it would just go anywhere. Where like someone like, you know, would say something like very relatively inoffensive to me and be like, fuck you, man. Like, you suck. Like, it was just like, and then you get to like a point where you're just like, I have ruined multiple relationships with how angry I can get. And it fucking sucks. And I don't want to be that dude anymore.
It's the Menzinger song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not just the anger, it's the shame, right? Like,
yeah.
It's and I think going back to our previous conversation about addiction, it's like the thing that addiction lives in the shadows because of shame.
Mm-hmm.
And because like, I don't know how to talk to my wife about my sex addiction, or I don't know how to talk to my wife about my alcoholism. I don't know how to talk to my parents about it. You know, I see those conversations all the time, and it's like, well, we're not going to get anywhere by just fucking sitting on our dicks. Like,
right. Yeah,
I think
the shame is huge. Like, there is no worse feeling than like flying off the handle and ruining,
blowing up at someone because you were drunk, and you get that text the next morning, and you're just like, I don't want to fucking do this anymore.
Yeah, it sucks. Like the immediate deflation after, like, it was never much of a bar fighter, but like if I would get mad and like throw something or smash a thing or like punch a hole in a wall, then like immediately feel like a 6-year-old, you know,
like dog shit, right?
Yeah. Just feel like the deflation. Like, you go from like feeling like the Hulk to just feeling this like just like shrunken down.
You feel like a tiny
little man.
Yeah.
And it's just the worst.
That's where a lot of it goes, right? That a lot of people, I think and especially, you know, with men, like men who are the angriest often feel the smallest, at least in casual observation. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, I understand that like being angry sucks. And the kicker is that you're going to feel worse because then you're going to have to deal with that feeling of like, I am the smallest person in the world.
Yeah, it sucks. And it like, it goes hand in hand with masculinity too. And like being, you know, As a lefty and a progressive person and all of that, like understanding that like the world does not exactly need more angry white red faced men, you know, like we're pretty good on that.
Exactly.
And that like it's just a bad look. But also like kind of understanding like you know, the like hack joke is, you know, how emotional women are, blah, blah, blah. Right. But we, in doing that, we not only kind of denigrate women and, you know, mistrust them with their emotions and, you know, like, oh, a woman could never be president, blah, blah, blah.
Well, we insult their intelligence, but we also insult our own intelligence.
Yeah. But like, you know, like that idea of like, oh, they'll nuke Russia if they're on their period or whatever, with like disregarding like, how emotional men are.
Exactly.
Because we are super emotional. We just have a different way of expressing it. And I think that like estrogen and hormonal cycles with, you know, with cis women, it's easier to track and it's easier to sort of notice, throughout the cycle, like how like hormones spike and cause emotions to rise and fall and all of that. With men, it's more consistent, but like I will die on the hill that testosterone is a hell of a drug. And it really, like, if you don't understand the way that it affects you, the way that it compels you to just fight and fuck, then it's going to get the better of you and make you right. do things that you don't want to do.
Right, exactly. You know, that's sort of what I totally agree. But I think that, like, pretending that men aren't emotional is such a fucking disservice to us as men, like, yeah. that we do to ourselves, where it's just like, and not even getting into the, like, oh, like, you're a pussy for crying bullshit nonsense, but the, like, you feel emotion too, you just have no fucking idea how to regulate yourself. That's the fucking problem, is that you've never been taught and you've never unlearned, you know, the societal expectations that you're gonna, like, just handle it. You don't need to just handle it. It's fine, but, like, I do need you to, like, get a fucking grip.
Emotional regulation is a big tool and a very hard, you know, kind of floating log to stay on top of. What are some tools that you've learned that have been, you know, useful that you feel like you apply on a regular basis?
Sure. I do emotional inventories, right? Where I come home from work and, like, you know, work can be very up and down, where you have triumphs of humanity and then you get to see humanity at its absolute fucking lowest. So I take a 15-minute inventory when I get home. My wife works till 5, so I just I sort of sit in my big ass recliner and I just think, you know, what did I process today? There's I do a version of the Jesuit examine, which is like, how did I honor God, or how did I do this? My wife is Catholic. I am not, but the Jesuits have some very good points, mm-hmm. including meditation. So that's, you know, I call it emotional inventory, but it really is a 15-minute meditative session where I'm just like, how did I honor the mission of my work today? What could I have done better? How am I feeling? You know, in terms of anger, I go for walks. You know, if I'm feeling particularly angry, I'll ask my wife, hey, do you want to go for a walk? Maybe we can chat. If I'm feeling particularly sad, I make Roz hang out with me. You know, a lot of what I do is just, I think a lot of it is what we tell people in medicine too, is listen to your body. What does your body need? You know, and I have found for me, that's meditation and journaling mostly. And I think a lot of it is just, there's a lot to be learned if you listen to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you, how do I put this? I feel like sometimes I go around as like a guy, like an angry, emotional guy. And then I encounter people who don't seem to get as worked up. And sure. I don't know what to do with them. I don't know how to relate. I don't know how to, like, I'm like, what do you mean you're not, that didn't make you furious? Like, what do you, like, how do you navigate the world? Like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, for sure. I have found that, like, you know, if, I hate to roll out a trope, but if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. Mm-hmm. You know, and I sort of keep those people at arm's length. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, I love you, I respect you, but, like, if you're not pissed off about the same stuff I'm pissed off about, like, are we on the same team?
Right.
You know, and there's a lot of, like, I think it's so easy, you know, for us as white men to sit here and be like, oh, do you like getting back to politics? Oh, it doesn't matter. Like, yeah, fuck, it does. Yeah, fuck, it does. It all fucking matters.
Yeah.
You know, all politics is local, right? So, like, when you're saying, like, oh, like, I'm not really into politics, you might as well spit in my fucking face. You might as well spit in, like, my clients' fucking faces.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't fucking get it. Yeah, you know, to reiterate, is that, like, how are you not, like, the angriest you've ever been all the time?
On that note, how did you get involved in social work and social housing and stuff like that?
Yeah, so I live relatively close to Lutheran Settlement House. Go ahead and dox myself. I had gotten laid off from a job. For a little bit of background, go to my work history, like, I've been doing an interview. I was working in finance at a soulless corporate job, making rich people richer, that I absolutely fucking hated. Just doing software development. But it was like, this shit, I don't give a fuck about this, right? Like, it pays the bills, it's nice, but I don't give a fuck about it. And my wife was like, hey, you should go check out that, you know, I'm looking, you should do more stuff that's like, coincidentally, not drinking. Like, when we were really having those conversations about what does our life look like post-drinking, she's like, you should go volunteer over there. And I was like, I kind of dragged my feet for a little, but I went over there, volunteered in their food pantry, which we do Monday through Friday, 9 to 3 o'clock. And I found I really liked it. And then they had an opening, and I was like, you know what, man? I can probably fucking do this. Interviewed, got the job, been doing everything there ever since.
Okay, so you didn't really have a background necessarily in like social work, administration, all of that stuff.
No. And I do have my bachelor's degree, but I've actually debated. I'm talking to anyone who will listen. I'm debating giving my MSW at this point. But I didn't have the background. Like I said, my mom has the background, so I learned. I had worked it at, you know, around marginalized communities in college, but hadn't gone with both feet in. My mom established York County's first domestic violence shelter, Access York, in the 70s or 80s. And my mom's did crisis psychology. And right. I, you know, having her as like a conduit was really useful, because it's like, oh, you're helping people who like no one gives a shit about.
Right.
Like, and that's really, you know, and it's like, it's very noble work. It's very good work. I'm glad we do it. But like, that's, you want to talk about anger. That's a place you're going to get angry.
Hmm. Yeah. So like going from, so you were doing like software engineering before?
Yeah.
So going from that into like social work, I imagine that's a bit of a pay cut.
Yeah, man, it's a bit of a pay cut. Yeah, man, it's a bit of a pay cut.
So what was making that jump like?
I am going to sound a little spoiled here, but Well, There's Your Problem Patreon does well enough.
Great.
That I could do it. And thank you, patrons. You know, that's been like the biggest change of my life in the last 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
is the coolest card to have in your corner in a capitalist society is being able to say, I could leave this job fucking tomorrow because the podcast works.
Yeah.
That must feel great. Yeah. I had a meeting with my manager at the old job, and it was just like, yeah, sorry, like you're laid off. We're going to lay you guys off and just start over. And she was like, how are you feeling about it? And I got to say, fuck you, and close my laptop and just ship it back.
Nice.
I believe what I said in the Teams chat before I got fired was suck shit. I got a call that was like, that's very unprofessional. I was like, doesn't matter. You're not hiring me back. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, like who
I
cares?
I can literally, say
fire take this, me.
Yeah, what do you exactly take this job and shove it?
Yeah, not enough people do that anymore. You know, like I feel like that's
well, you
the
can't.
Biggest,
capitalism.
You can't. Yeah, I mean, because you're most people are living hand to mouth, like including people who like work in the tech sector who are supposedly like, you know, making money hand over fist and like doing great, but like given the job market, you get to a point where you're like very dependent on whatever job it is you have, and then you have to kind of just like, you know, they say jump, you say how high.
Right, exactly. And there's, you know, I'm very grateful and lucky, and you know, we are in a position where my wife could get laid off and we'd survive it. The worst case scenario, we can survive it now.
Yeah.
Please don't cancel your Patreon subscriptions. I need them.
I mean, and Philly, I mean, for you live in Philly, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and for now anyway, Philly is, well, at least a more affordable city than, say, New York, where I live, and I don't know why I do sometimes.
Move to Philly. Move to Philly.
It's rough. Let's talk about the podcast for a minute. When did that start? And, you know, how'd you get together with these people? Because, like, it's such a good vibe of, you know, like, these incredibly smart, you know, like autistic, like train brains, you know, the all kind of coming together in like one big Voltron.
Yeah. So it's really funny, actually. So Roz has been doing content for years. And November has been doing content for years. And I had approached Roz when we were living together. I was like, we should do a podcast. He's like, okay, about what? I was like, we should, like, news or something. So there's an abortive first episode you'll never hear. I don't even know if we have the recording anymore, where it just like wasn't very good. And then November reached out to Roz and was like, I want to do a podcast with you about engineering disasters. And Roz was like, okay. And I got my feelings hurt. And I was like, well, I would thought we were supposed to do a podcast. He was like, you can be on my podcast, Liam. Right. And so that's why there's three of us. Because if you go back and listen to the very first episode hosted on Do Not Eat's channel, you will notice there is no Liam. But by episode two, I'm there because I got my feelings hurt. But hey, I expressed my feelings in a constructive
way.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, you spoke up and now you're an essential part of the show. I mean, you know, and it worked out. It's hard to make a podcast with just two people who like both. I don't know a whole lot about either of them, but it seems like the both of them have like a really deep understanding of engineering and civic planning and just all of this shit that like I can't even fathom. And you bring other stuff, you know, you bring like social things and history and all this other thing to it. So mm-hmm. like, you know, it's.
We talk about, I think November used the phrase from Engels, social murder. And that's, you know, we're a true crime podcast with social murder attached.
Mm-hmm.
I just got an email. You'll love this from Spotify. Asking us to talk about their scaled podcast creator programs. And I'm like, oh, you're going to love this shit. This is going to be the most unprofessional 30 minutes you've ever heard in your life. It's like, it's so funny because, you know, I think a lot of what I try to do and what we try to do in general is like just very, I was always into DIY sort of pop punk and hardcore as a kid. And this podcast is the most aggressively DIY thing there's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Like we do it all ourselves. That's why your emails don't get answered. That's just me doing it,
right?
But I think a lot of it is that November and Roz, especially Roz, and that's not to demean November. She's brilliant, but his background encompasses so many things, and she's so well read. And then I'm just like popping up, like, hey, you like that? We should talk about contextually why this is bad,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of engineering is. I hate to say the phrase right-wing coded, but you see those like statue and return people on Twitter.
Yeah.
And they're just like, well, why can't we build it anymore? It's like, all right, well, it's more nuanced than we don't know how.
Yeah.
You know, and you motherfuckers are going to sit there and learn.
Yeah. So that's the thing is, so with Roz in November, like they are super, I mean, I don't really know what they're like, academic backgrounds are, but they seem very like academic, like they actually
right.
like, have a lot going on in you know in terms of like hard knowledge, right?
Roz has a civil engineering degree from our beloved Drexel University.
Mm-hmm.
November has an undergraduate degree, but I don't know in, and two-thirds of a law degree.
Yeah. So like when you have two people like that who are incredibly like book smart, not to say that you're not book smart, but right. you need somebody to sort of humanize that
right.
that stream of information. Otherwise it becomes so esoteric that most people listening aren't really going to understand like why is this important. And that's right. what the missing link is. And that's why like it once a generation somebody comes along who's like a Carl Sagan who can understand the very intricate little pieces of astrophysics, but can also give it to you in a really compelling human way and connect to you and like be you know, be human and be funny about it. But it's like that bridge between like a Stephen Hawking who's like way out there and also kind of weird and not great as a person. And
possibly like a sex pest, right?
Possibly a sex pest and like a Kurt Vonnegut who like, you know, isn't necessarily like a super genius astrophysicist, but like knows how to talk to people. And that's a different kind of intelligence. And the merging of both of them is what's important. And yeah, like science, you know, like I finally just watched Oppenheimer. Like science can be used in service of all kinds of things, and they're brilliant people. And then they end up working for, you know,
Lockheed Martin,
because that's where the money is. That's where the jobs exactly. are. That's where they, and like, if they don't have the moral compass to apply the, like, why am I doing this? Like, then, you know, who knows what happens? Like, I mean, we know what happens. We're seeing what happens, you know? And so like when you have to combine the brain and the heart in a lot of ways, and that's a tough needle to thread, right?
Yeah, 100%. I believe that, you know, the podcast doesn't work without all three of us. You know, I am the one who responds to your angry reviews. But I do think that we, you know, as sort of blurring the line between entertainers and historians, almost, not to call myself a historian, but we are presenting the, you know, facts and whatever. I think that what we get down to is why, you know, why was, as an example, Union Carbide allowed to build a plant in Bhopal that just didn't have to conform to safety? Why wasn't there a concern about safety? Why have the victims of Bhopal simply been left to die? You know, what humanizes someone like Jordan McNair, who died of heat stroke at the University of Maryland? Why does his former coach still have a job? Why do we find that acceptable? It's not enough to say, oh, tons of people died, because you could just fucking read the wiki at that point, as we've said. But I think, you know, I really do try to like, again, circling back on our conversation on anger. I'm sorry that I said circling back. Going back to our conversation on anger, it's not enough to just know why things happen. You have to contextualize across, and in our case, the failures of capitalism and, you know, U.S. imperialism, all that, not just U.S., but imperialism as a general, and sort of the march throughout history of people are willing to, yeah, disregard other human lives for profit. And, you know, we talked about this week, it hasn't come out yet, but Aaron Bushnell, the man who self-immolated in protest of U.S. support of Israeli genocide. And how, what do you say? You know, we talked about that in the context of that episode is going to be bleeped 900 times, but the context of suicide.
Yeah.
And what it means to kill yourself in protest.
Yeah.
And that, you know, what does that mean? How do we humanize that? How do we, you know, preserve and protect and honor and respect Aaron Bushnell and what he did, and not say, well, he killed himself because he was crazy.
Yeah. This is an issue that's come up, obviously, on this podcast a lot in the last couple of weeks. Is like, are you crazy or is the world crazy? You know, are you crazy or are you a like sane and empathetic human who is reacting to a insane and cruel world? And it's hard to tell sometimes.
Yeah, you know? It sure is.
And like, especially if you're somebody who's kind of been both at certain times, you know, like right. I fully am, like, you know how, like, there's people who are in activism who, like, they get to like a certain degree of importance if they're like, I don't know, an activist, a journalist, a labor leader or whatever. And, they get a certain amount of attention and then they have to like go out and say, like, if I wind up dead, I didn't kill myself, you know, like,
right.
That's not something that everybody can say, because some people who are with the cause have also struggled with mental health and have at times been suicidal, you know? And so like, it's easy to discredit somebody. And I know that like, there's people listening who could politically disagree with me who could just write me off as just like, well, he's crazy. He said himself, he's in therapy and he's on these antidepressants and he's like spiraled out about like this or that thing. So like, why should we listen to his thoughts on, you know, on trans rights or labor issues or anything like that? And I'm just like, because I'm right about that. I'm just nuts when it comes to my interpersonal relationships. And
I can be both. Like that. I can both. Be
both, man. Come on.
Yeah, I think for us with mental illness who are on the left, you know, there's something to be said about, well, a couple things. The first thing that comes to mind is guns and gun control, where the mm-hmm. where the right is always willing to say it's mental health. And it's like, well, yeah, to some extent, you're right. But it's not mental health in a fucking bubble, dude. Like, why is it mental health? Why have the societal boundaries broke down so much that we now find mass shootings acceptable in schools?
Yeah.
Like, how does that fucking work? You know, and I'm pretty lenient about the Second Amendment, but fucking come on now. Is where I'm at.
Yeah, there should be some sort of breaking point. And I'm also like at this point so black-pilled when it comes to Second Amendment stuff, because I'm just like, it's too late, man.
Right. Like, once we decided that the murder of children was acceptable, it's over.
And like the gun manufacturers have already won. They've already been making bajillions of these weapons that are already out there. It's right. too late. It's over. Right. Like, we lost that fight. Like, there's no putting that genie back in the bottle, you know? And, right. and so like, I can be an idealist about it and think like, oh, we should ban all guns, but that literally will not work. So like, where do we go from here is like more how I approach that kind of that question. Like, I guess we have to deal with the fact that there's people with a lot of guns and they're not going to give them up. And we have to find some sort of solution based on the reality of that.
Right.
I don't know what that might be. I'm not smart.
And I don't know either. I'm not a gun control expert. But I think, you know, in advocacy, we often, you know, I have this sort of pet theory that might come off like a bit brutish, but mental health advocacy has gotten great at addressing two specific things, which are depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is sort of behind a wall. You know, where we talk about, you know, when you see things like, just an example that really bothers me, people putting their antidepressants or antipsychotics in like a Pez dispenser. It's like, I get it, but, you know, we're not, when we talk about mental health advocacy, at least in the mainstream, we're not talking about bipolar disorder. We're not talking about obsessive compulsive disorder. We're not talking about schizophrenia, schizoaffective, the ugly shit.
Yeah.
That's not just going to go away with like a little bit of Prestige. And I love Prestige. I'm on Prestige, but I'm on a handful of other things too. And I struggle very often with the fact that it feels like when we talk about mental health advocacy, we're not talking about the whole damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about, you know, the just depression and anxiety, which is great, but we sort of are willing to push away the what I would sort of say are the bad ones.
Yeah.
You know, and that's very frustrating for me. And I think that, like, for me specifically, involved in a world that feels just totally disconnected, you know, it's important to remember that, like, yeah, I don't really know what I'm going to say, but it's really important to remember, I think, you're not crazy. And maybe you are. I don't know. But if you, like, the first thing you have to do is at least help yourself. And understand that, like, you are not going to be a very good advocate if you're not, you know, staying on top of yourself. And that's hard with depression. And that's hard with anxiety. And you don't have to be perfect at those things. But when you advocate for marginalized communities, whether that be people with disabilities, whether that be LGBTQ folks, whether that be, you know, whoever, you have to advocate for yourself too. In as much as you're advocating for other people. Like, don't forget yourself is what I'm saying.
Hell yeah. I think that's a good note to end on. I'm sorry, I want to keep going, but I actually have to go to another thing, and we started a little late. But
sorry about that.
It's okay. You know, I would gladly have you back on the show some other time, because I feel like we were just kind of, you know, we were vibing. But I got a heart out. So let's do plugs and everything, and you know, and get you out of here.
Sure. Well, there's your problem, 10,000 losses. Those are the only two I'm on. Suck shit, November.
Yeah.
Lutheran Settlement House.
Lutheran
Settlement House, LSH Philly on socials, settlementhouse.org.
Hell yeah. Okay. One more question that I hope that you can answer briefly. What is it in your theory? Like, do you have a theory about what is it with like people on the autism spectrum and trains specifically?
Order.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
The schedules are predictable. Trains consists are predictable. They're big. They're cool. They're big and cool, and they're not the same thing every time. All trains are different. All trains are kind of the same.
Right. Yeah, that's a good theory. That makes total sense. Okay. Thank you. That's a good lightning round question. All right. Thank you so much for being on the show, and hope to have you back sometime.
I'd love to be. Thank you so much.
Thanks once again to Liam Anderson for being on the show. Check out Well, There's Your Problem. I think you'd like it. If you like this show, it's just they go hard. They go deep. They have like 4-hour episodes sometimes. It's very it's esoteric. I think you already have to have a little bit of an interest in buildings and architecture and civic planning and trains and technology and stuff like that. So if that's the thing you like, then you're gonna love it, baby. You're gonna love it. But fuck, do they know their shit. It's crazy and intimidating how smart they are. All the people on that show. Like, the references that they can pull out to just one little esoteric moment in history. Some labor strike in the 1800s, and they're all like, yeah, totally, that one. It's just like that. And I'm like, okay, I have to Google that. Anyway, it's a fun show. Check it out. And that's all. I put the link for the nonprofit, what's it called? Lutheran House? Lutheran thing? I already forgot what it's called. The cool Lutheran social services program he works for. I'm drawing a blank on the name, but you know what it is, and I can't look it up right now because I'm holding a microphone. But I put that in the show notes. Go donate that and check it out if you feel so inclined. That's all. I'm Brad Pearson. Until next time, you know, get outside, chill out, roll around, unionize your workplace, vibe, grill something if you can, outdoors, of course. You know, we don't want you to end up on Well, There's Your Problem. Make sure you're using proper ventilation and fire safety. Know what you're doing. I'm sure you got it figured out. You're not stupid. All right. That's all. Goodbye. I love you. I die for you. I kiss you on the lips.